Hi, welcome to The Left Brain Artist. I'm Suzanne Redmond. On my podcast, I interview a different artist every week. We talk about their beginnings in the art world, how they developed their style, and their art business. My hope is that you'll hear about an art technique you'd like to try, or you'll learn something that you can take back to your art business. Today, I'm speaking with Jana Freeman. Jana has created a business called Way Art Yonder Studio near San Diego, California. There, she hosts art workshops for instructors and students from all over the world. Her studio space can hold up to 20 people comfortably indoors, but the bonus is she also has a large outdoor space where they can do the messier part of art making, like encaustics and eco-dyeing. Even better, she offers free open studios every month so that you can join her community of artists and create art in her space away from your busy life. This is Jana Freeman. All right, I'm with Jana Freeman today. Jana, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Suzanne.
Oh, this is going to be a fun conversation because Jana has her own studio in the San Diego area where she brings in instructors from all over and students come in from all over and they teach these wonderful classes. So she's going to tell us about that. But I wanted to first start talking about where did you get into the art world? How did that happen before you even decided to create the studio?
Well, that's funny. You should ask that. I mean, you know, as a child, I was very, you know, into drawing and coloring. And, you know, and at that point in time, you know, you really had a solid arts education
right. In
elementary and, you know, through middle school. I mean, you know, those were required classes. And,
yeah.
You know, and it's funny. I just got together with a friend of mine from elementary school just last week, and we both immediately like recalled our, you know, fourth grade art teacher's name, right?
That's awesome.
I mean, this is like, I'm sorry, you know, I know just a few years ago, not really, but we both are just like, oh yeah, Mrs. Voss. And I mean, it's like such an impactful time in my life. So I've always been creative, but you know, there's a point in time where that's no longer cool. It's no longer encouraged. There's no money to be made in that. You know, it's frivolous, blah, 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 blah. All of these little voices that we get from the outside world that we
right. Then
internalize. And so our creativity frequently gets put on hold, right?
Unfortunately. Yep.
So I really dropped, you know, that side of me for a long time. I moved out to California and started getting, I got a job working for a really famous architect. Can I say his name?
Sure. Yeah.
Frank Gehry.
I know one of his buildings very well. Yeah. Wow.
So yeah, it was one of these like just serendipitous opportunities that that I, you know, walked upstairs to an office and saw an office filled with magazine covers, you know, Time magazine and, you know, his face and buildings. And I was like, oh, wow. You know, what's this girl from the Midwest doing up here? Right. And I was like, wow, this is really something. I worked in his office for 8 years. And during that time, I mean, it was, you'd be very hard pressed to not be influenced by the amount of creativity that was around me at the time.
Oh, okay.
You know, everything from models to, you know, this was pre AutoCAD. So people are still drawing, you know, by hand on Mylar and vellum with, you know, real pencils and ink pens. And
oh, wow. Well, I can't even imagine how you drew his pieces, because if I'm describing it properly, his piece looks like the roof might look like a piece of paper that's curled backwards.
Right. And it might be, but the roof may be seven pieces of paper that are curled backwards in seven different directions. Yeah.
And actually, you know, it's funny because in early conceptual design stages, I mean, you would see Frank in a glass conference room working with his designers. And yeah. frequently you would see, you know, a wad of paper just like tacked onto a block. And, you know, and it would go from this very loose sketch that he had made. And then, you know, from these loose sketches, they would go out and they would come back with just some models, and they would just keep refining and refining refining until they actually had the shape of the building in a three-dimensional form.
Oh, that's
and
amazing.
Then from there, they would start working on the drawings.
Oh, right. So, because all that had to come first, and then they had to figure out how to draw
that. To translate into drawings.
The reason I know I'm familiar with his buildings is I went to college in Cleveland at East Western Reserve, and I have a degree in accounting, so I went to the business school. After I left, they built a new business school, and it's a Frank Gehry designed business school. Did you work on that project?
I did not. I had already left. I had already left. I mean, when I was in his office, I started there the year after he won the Pritzker Prize for Architecture.
Okay.
And he had and it was also about a year after he was awarded the commission for Disney Concert Hall.
Oh, okay, right. And that's probably his most famous American building.
Yes. And then, but during that time, probably the other building that you'd be familiar with would be the Guggenheim in Bilbao, Spain.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but part of Frank's contemporaries, beyond just, you know, amazing architectural design talent, were this constant stream of contemporary artists that would come in the office. And working with various curators of museums for exhibitions, whether it was either you know, his architecture and his models, or whether it was things from his personal art collection that were going on loan. And so you know, I started out as the receptionist, but by the time I left, I was doing business development, exhibitions, handling press requests, exhibitions, product design, all sorts of things.
So you were definitely learning on the job and successful at it. Yeah,
absolutely.
That's great.
Absolutely. Okay. So fast forward, you know, a couple of kids later, you know, we relocated to San Diego. My first husband and I, better place to raise kids, right?
Okay.
At least that's where we were thinking. And we moved down here, and I continued to work with various different architecture firms in San Diego. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of where I continued to feed my creative juices, except it really wasn't anything for me.
Right. Yeah, you weren't the one doing the creating, but you were working, you were taking it all in.
I was taking it all in. And yet there was still part of me that was like, you know, I need to be doing something. You know, and I had taken some classes at community colleges. I was doing a lot of writing at the time, which was also feeding, you know, my muse.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was, I don't know. I mean, there wasn't really anything I could do with it. I mean, the writing became more journaling versus creative writing. And there wasn't really anything that I felt like there was a tangible result at the end of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. You wanted to produce something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, My first marriage ended, and a few years later, I met my wonderful husband, Jeff, who's probably my number one fan and greatest cheerleader and supporter. And we moved out to Jamul, California, which is about 25 miles east of downtown San Diego.
Okay.
He wanted to be on more land. I was not so convinced at the time.
Yeah. You were a city girl?
Definitely a city girl. And yeah. There's a whole lot more nature out here than, what I was comfortable with at first.
Okay.
I've since settled into that. Every now and then there's still some things that like make me a little squeamish, but, for the most part, I'm okay.
All right.
But we moved out to Jamul. We could buy a much larger home than what we could have inside the city.
Okay.
And part of that is that we were able to have, he has his office. I have my office / personal studio.
Okay.
We also have this whole lower level of our home that is west facing. With beautiful views. And while my sons were still living here, that was the man cave.
Okay. Because you were outnumbered.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, that space saw ping pong tables and foosball tables,
right,
and big screen TVs and, the entire, senior water polo team party and things like that. But as my sons grew up and moved out of the house, we had this space.
Okay.
It's like, wow, I'm claiming it.
All right.
And so
your time has come.
Yeah. And so it's really a great space. It's about 1,200 square feet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So
it was one big space. It wasn't subdivided in rooms.
One big space.
Nice.
One big space, yeah.
Okay.
So perfect art studio.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Did you have a plan in your head of what you were going to do down there? No.
No.
Okay.
No. I suppose your listeners couldn't see me shaking my head just now. No.
Yeah.
I really had no idea. I guess maybe let's back up a little bit. I started art journaling. Remember I was talking about I was doing a lot of writing.
Okay.
And things like that. And
You're like the third or fourth person I've interviewed who has said that's what started them in the art world or the mixed media world is the art journaling.
It really did.
Yeah.
It really did. I was doing art journaling before I knew that it was called art journaling.
Yep.
I was doing stuff in little moleskin journals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I started doing that because, well, when you write things down in a diary or a journal, sometimes those things can be used against you.
Okay.
and I decided, along the breakup of my first marriage that I would start doing this art journaling. I mean, it fulfilled an outlet for me to create, to express myself, but not using a vocabulary that was easily interpreted from somebody who just may happen to pick up my journal and look into it.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So yes, you wanted it to be more visual and less really obvious words.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what I found is that through, working on a page and throwing some paint or some collage or things like that, I it was very meditative. I was still thinking about all the things that I would have been writing down, but somehow I worked through those things and was left with a beautiful page.
Oh, great. Right. So it was just, it was the process that you needed.
It was cathartic.
That's
great. And so I found art journaling at a place in my life where I needed that sort of cathartic release.
Okay.
And so, just starting with the art journaling, I did that for a number of years. I even taught a beginner's art journaling class to a handful of friends.
Oh, fun.
Like,
okay.
Oh, what are you doing? What is that? And it's like, well, you know, this is what I'm doing. And, you know, and it helps me. It helps me sort out stuff that's going on in my head. And, you know, and still, I didn't really know that it was called art journaling. I didn't really know about mixed media and this gigantic community that mixed media art and visual journaling offers. I really had no idea.
So how had you found art journaling as a thing if you hadn't found the community yet?
Well, I had no idea that what I was doing was art journaling. So I was just doing my own thing and then found, you know, and I mean, art journaling is so great because it's really like there are no rules.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So and, you were, so it was very personal to you. It wasn't that you were trying to copy techniques of what anybody else did. You were making it up as on your own.
I was. Mm-hmm. I was. And so then, you know, with Facebook and things like that, then I was introduced by somebody else. They had found the Documented Life Project. And
that sounds familiar, but I'm trying to remember what that was.
So that was about, I want to say, 5 years ago.
Okay.
It was a group of five artists, several of them based in Florida. It was Robin Marie Smith, Lorraine Bell.
Okay.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
Lorraine Bell, Miss Megan, I don't know.
Okay.
And a few others. They had created this group where they had a weekly prompt and you had your calendar and, you know, so you had your planner on one side and then they would give you a prompt and, you know, you would decorate the rest of your page. And so it started out in just like a weekly, you know, Moleskin.
Like a date book or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I joined this and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is totally what I've been doing. I just had no idea.
Ah, okay.
That it was called this. And so that was kind of, you know, that little carrot, you know, for me to follow. And of course that led down, you know, to many, many, many other rabbit holes. And then I discovered, you know, different publications, cloth, paper, scissors.
Yep.
All of the Somerset public, and I was just gobbling them up. I was voracious. I was like, oh my gosh, this is great. This is exactly what I've been doing. I love doing this. And so that's pretty much what I started doing. With that also came a lot of online classes, which, you know, it's shameful. I want to just say right now, if my husband's listening to this, that this is the point when you should put your fingers in your ears and not listen to this. But it's shameful the amount of money that I've spent on online classes and never finished them.
Some
I never even opened up the first lesson.
Okay.
Okay, so, all right. So, honey, you can take your fingers out of your ears now.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, there's something to be said about learning styles, and everybody has a learning style. I am not a good online class taker.
But how many did it take before you said that, you realized that?
You know, a few, and I'm actually still enrolled in a couple right now. So I'm hoping I will actually finish one that I just started. It's difficult for me
too.
I learn better, you know, when I have somebody in front of me who's actually demoing. And I'm doing it at the same time they're doing it, or I'm watching them and then I can sit right back down and do it and ask questions, you know, right away, which,
and
you know,
get feedback
right away. And I, you know, that's just my, or can you repeat that? And for me to sit down in front of my computer or my iPad and watch a lesson And it's like, okay, I've watched all that. Now I have to, you know, stop this. And then I have to go over to my art table and then I have to start working. And, oh, what did she say? Oh, well, let me go back. It's very disjointed for me, but okay. That's just me, because I know so many people who love, and I'm always getting people bugging me, like, do you guys do any online classes? Could you maybe like live video some of your instructors? And so, I mean, I know that there's a huge demand, and a lot of artists have found, you know, great success in right. doing it. And I totally get that, but it's just not the right thing for me. So knowing my own learning style, I need to have somebody right here.
Okay.
So when you're asking me, did I have a plan? No. But okay. I was paying attention to what was working for me and what wasn't working for me.
All right.
And then I went and I attended my first, you know, retreat workshop.
In person. Okay.
In person. I went to Taos and took a class with Lynn Perella at the Mabel Dodge Lujan House, which was extraordinary, beautiful location.
Right.
You know, and she's lovely, and what a generous, I mean, she's just such a generous and wonderful teacher, human being. And that was fantastic. And here I am in the company of, you know, 20 other women, and we're all, and so that was like, this was real time. This wasn't a Facebook group. These are people that are like right next to me, and we're laughing and giggling and sharing and creating and all, you know, having this common experience.
Yeah, so much better than an experience with an iPad. Right. Yeah.
So again, that was just like a big aha thing for me. But if you think the amount of money that I spent, you know, on my online classes, was obscene and shameful, I was like, I couldn't possibly, you know, feed my new art habit of attending retreats. Like, it was just like, oh my gosh, like I could spend a lot of money going everywhere,
traveling.
Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, okay, I need to dial this back. And I tried some more online classes.
just because,
yeah. Because, you know, by gosh, you can download them and keep them forever, or,
right.
you know,
yeah, lifetime
anyway.
Access.
Anyway, I feel like I'm kind of losing track here of what I was trying to say.
No, it's all good.
In San Diego, I found that there wasn't a huge diversity of mixed media classes being offered locally and throughout the Southern California region. And wanting more, I, you know, looked at the space that we had downstairs, and it's like, you know, I have the space.
Right.
And so I reached out to an artist who actually, you know, had been down here once before. And I asked her if she wouldn't mind coming down and teaching a few classes. And she's like, no, I'd love to do that, Jana. And so so Roxanne Coble was the first artist. And you might know her by Bun. She has a lot of online classes. She's adorable. I love her. Just, you know, and such a great energy and a great, teacher. And so she came down and she, you know, we booked, two weekend long, but there were four different classes, but we did them over 2 weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And I just put it out there on Facebook, and guess what? People came.
Oh,
and
that's fabulous.
And it was a little slow at first. I mean, you know, we just like barely made her minimum, her class minimum. But by that summer, you know, I had a lot of people that were very, very interested. And so I just started reaching out to some of the, you know, some other artists whose work I admired, and started asking people. And at first,
That's
you know,
great.
some some of the people that I talked to were like, well, who are you? And, you know, where's Jamal? And, you know, and so there was a little reluctance in the very beginning, okay. But I was, you know, through talking to people, it was just like, yeah, that sounds great.
All right. Had you branded yourself and given it a name yet? Did you call it Way Art Yonder Studio?
You know, I didn't call it Way Art Yonder Studio immediately.
Okay.
But probably by the third or fourth class, I was calling it Way Art Yonder.
Okay.
And what's funny is because our when we first moved out here, my husband named our Wi-Fi Way Out Yonder.
Oh.
Right? Because we're kind of really out there.
Okay.
Right? And so he had named it Way Out Yonder. And I was like, well, how about Way Art Yonder? You know?
I like that. That's great.
And so that's that was, you know, and it sounds better than doing art out in the middle of nowhere. Right?
Right.
But so we called it, yeah. So I started calling it Way Art Yonder and, you know, it just started to build. And so I took everything from my professional, you know, past life.
You know, you had a wealth of experience doing so many different things. Yeah.
Right. Just started pouring that into developing the studio.
Okay.
And developing the artists who come in to teach, developing the community that has come to know and love Way Out Yonder. So that's really what I've been doing. And it's, you know, this is just the second year.
Oh, that's tremendous.
And 2019 is already off the charts. I mean, I have classes every month except for December scheduled in 2019.
Nice.
And many of those classes are either sold out already or close to selling out or nearly half full.
Oh my gosh. So, that's amazing. Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's
thank
wonderful.
You. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Well, let me talk about or ask you some questions about the nuts and bolts of this a little bit. About how many students can you fit in a class? What would be your maximum?
If the class is totally indoors, 20 people, and that includes the teaching artist and myself.
That's a good size.
And it's just because I'm very particular about not cramming people in. Can we fit more people in the space? Absolutely. But I think we've all been to workshops where there's been, you know, barely any room between you and the person next to you or the person on the other side of you. And yeah. You know, I approach everything kind of from how do I like things?
Well, that's a great way to look at it. Right.
And what am I comfortable with? And I mean, certainly, you know, I would be probably most comfortable if I had my very own 6 foot long table because I like to spread out.
Right.
However, that's not really doable. But having two people for every 6 foot table, that is totally doable. And
that's pretty good.
You're not cramped. You've got room to spread out. You've got room to put your stuff up and be comfortable. You're not encroaching on somebody else. You know, you don't have to be so worried about if they spill their paint water or, you know, I mean, it's
right.
Just, so I approach things from what, like my comfort level, like what's my ideal workshop.
Okay. All right.
Right.
So you said 20 people indoors. What type of things do you do outdoors? What do you have? You have outdoor tables and things too?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
I mean, we're on 5 acres.
Oh, okay.
So there's quite a bit of room, to do things. I have, a 50 foot long covered archway, that's just outside the studio.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So we'll do everything out there from, you know, welding to eco dyeing to, you know, to whatever else the instructor has cooked up for us. you know, we've taken, you know, large stretches of newsprint out and done mark making, you know, out on, you know, out in the dirt. I mean, it's, you know, we've been able, because we have the space, it really frees up our visiting teaching artist to really, like, they're able to expand what they want to do,
right,
beyond,
okay,
the confines of a studio. Because when you're in a studio in an indoor space, most people are a little bit like, oh, geez, you know, I don't want to have my students, like, you know, just like waving paintbrushes all around, because, you know, I don't want paint on, you know, her walls or her furniture or, you know,
right. Mm-hmm.
So being able to have the option of going outside, and because it's San Diego, I mean, we typically have pretty nice weather year round.
Yeah, we could never do this in Florida in about 8 months of the year.
Right.
Be just
right.
Too hot. All right. Well, I'd like to ask you about one of the outdoor classes, or maybe part of the classes outdoor. Tell me about the eco dyeing, because I think I saw some pictures on your, it might have been Facebook or it might have been your website. But was that where they have the copper tubing and then they've wrapped, is it,
yes,
fabric or is it paper that they've wrapped around it?
Both.
Oh, okay.
And I think the images that you saw were, we have Leslie Marsh here in July,
okay,
for a beautiful book that we made with, soldered covers, and the pages were all eco dyed, and we used, both paper, and she had brought some wool for us,
oh, okay,
as well to use, because we ended up making a bag for our books to fit in.
Oh, that's cute. Okay.
And,
so you did part of the class indoors when you're working on maybe the covers and.
Actually, the covers were soldered, so
yeah,
that was also outside, and
oh,
that was
right,
under that covered archway,
that
out of the
sense,
sun, fortunately. But,
yeah, but and then
we had a big,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we had a big pop-up setup. You know, where we have the pots of the witch's brew is what I call it. Actually, my youngest son used to say, Mom, are you doing that witchy thing again? Yeah. Yes, we are. We're eco dying. We had the pots and the camp stove out on that area under,
okay,
the pop up. And then we just ran a big clothesline down the archway, and it was just,
oh, so
at the
dry
images that you saw, it was so beautiful because the sun was behind those pages, and they looked like stained glass. They were just,
oh, wow,
gorgeous. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For these classes, so you were calling people. You were saying, hey, I exist down here near,
mm-hmm,
San Diego. Would you like to teach a class here? Do you have people calling you now saying, hey, I've heard of you, can I do a class?
I do.
That's
do.
Great.
And yeah, so we've actually, it is great. We've actually gone from, you know, me knocking on doors to people approaching me.
Wonderful.
And I'll go an even step further than how wonderful that is that when I have artists who have taught here who are asking to come back, or who are telling their artist friends, you really need to teach at Jana's studio.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's really nice that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw, is Leslie Marsh coming back?
Leslie Marsh will be back twice in 2019.
Awesome.
We just added a class in April with her and Richard Sally doing their medieval Book of Trees. And
I
then
saw
she,
that. Yeah, I've taken a class with him. He's great.
You know, it's jeweler, metalsmith meets book artist. It's,
yeah,
like, it's a happy little marriage there. I can hardly
great
wait for the class. And you know, then she will be back in September with Kim Beller, and they're doing this really unique project that combines indigo dyeing processes with,
okay,
the eco dyeing, and,
oh,
then it's this paper folding. It's a Chinese thread book. And so the book opens out into multiple pockets. It's just gorgeous.
Oh my gosh. Oh man, you're bringing the greatest classes. How fun is that? So are the classes generally a couple of days?
Usually the classes are at least, for 2019, they're all weekend classes. Some are 3-day classes and even one, Crystal Neubauer is teaching a 4-day, wax, paper, scissors intensive class.
Okay.
So we'll be exploring collage, cold wax, and encaustics over 4 days. And so the encaustics, of course, will be outside. Under that archway, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So
doing messy wax outdoors. There you go.
Yes. Yes.
That's great. When your students come and the instructor comes, where are they staying overnight for this multi-day class?
Well, I always offer to the visiting artist a guest bedroom here on site.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, they have a beautifully appointed guest room with a private terrace.
Very nice.
That overlooks the mountains, and a private bath. That helps cut down on their travel expenses as well. If I pick them up at the airport, bring them back here, and we feed them, and we like to eat. My husband and I are both, really big foodies, so, we take good care of our visiting artists while they're here. I do have a couple of other guest rooms available. And just depending on whether the artist who's teaching is like, I'm not really wild about people staying. Most are fine with that. Somebody else staying on site.
Yeah.
I'm able to offer those guest rooms, but for the most part, I've gone through area accommodations. I have something worked out with the closest boutique hotel that's closest to the studio, the Vineyard Hacienda.
Okay.
I have something worked out with them so that they give people a discount. But there's only 6 rooms there. And their primary business is weddings.
Oh, okay.
It's a beautiful property, but sometimes that's a little hard to book. And so I offer a list of area accommodations that I've personally checked out that I feel comfortable that if you're, a woman traveling on your own, that this is, you're in a safe, clean area.
Good. Right. Good. Okay. And one of the things I saw on your website is that sometimes you do, and I forget what you called it, like a reception maybe to meet the artist. Is that what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So usually we found that it works best on either the first day of class or on the last day of class.
Okay.
Most people opt for the first day because it's a great icebreaker.
Yeah.
So how it works is that after class, there's a, 30 minutes of tidying up and I slip upstairs and, end up putting out, cheese and charcuterie, fruit, crackers, bread.
Oh, that's nice.
We'll have wine, non-alcoholic drinks, and just, it's a chance for about 90 minutes after class for everybody to sort of unwind, have a chance to actually, get to know each other. In a less focused environment. I mean, because we are busy bees in these classes. I'll tell
you. I bet.
It's like we get in. I mean, there's a lot of community and camaraderie, but we're focused. And the artist who's teaching is also very focused. And so these receptions are just a great opportunity for everybody to just be people. And get to know each other and, spend some time together. And, I'll tell you the very next day, I mean, there's such bonding that's taken place in these receptions.
Oh,
I bet. It's just, and so the next morning when everybody comes in, it's just like this big, it's really nice.
Yeah. That's nice. Okay, I want to switch gears a little bit, and I would like to talk about your art, because you post some really nice things that you make. When did you start making art and showing it out to the world?
You know, it's kind of going from the, you know, art journaling to taking this step into actually putting things out into the world and calling myself an artist, which, you know, I think for many of us, it's a hard thing to say out loud. So, I'm just going to say that I've been growing into that
for a long time.
And I've finally, you know, reached a point where I can introduce myself as an artist, and feel okay with that.
Okay. You know? Yeah. Yeah. So. Well, you know, when you have a background of art journaling, you know, that's just such a process of being so personal, and you're not showing them to other people. You're not opening the pages to other people. So I can understand where you're coming from.
Well, and it's also making that jump from getting out of the art journal into a format that you can share with others.
Yep.
So mm-hmm. whether that is, you know, starting to work on panels, which I've been doing, more collage, or actually painting on canvas, which I'm still learning. I'll tell you the canvas thing, the jump from getting out of the art journaling and onto the canvas was a really huge, scary leap for me. I bought an easel even.
Yay.
And my easel sat in the box.
Oh no.
For a year because I was terrified of it.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's just because the presumption for me is that, okay, well, if I'm painting on a canvas, then when I'm done with it, then what do I do with it?
You hang it on your wall.
Right. Well, talk about pressure, right?
At least with my
art journal, I could just close the book and put it away.
I guess it's just I'm a couple years ahead of you because I hang them on my wall and they're nothing special. I'm an abstract artist. I can't do a figure, but I put them on the wall. There you go. They're there.
You know, and good for you. And yeah. I do have a couple of canvases that I haven't put up on the wall, but I have put up collage that I've done.
Very nice.
On the wall. So I'll send you a picture of those because I'm actually quite proud of those.
Oh, good. Okay.
But the canvas thing, that's a work in progress.
Yeah.
For me.
Right.
I'm not there yet, but you know what? I've got some really great instructors coming in 2019 that are apps. Those classes are all about on the canvas or on a panel. So, so by this time next year, I'll probably have a lot of things on my wall that I'll be proud of.
That's wonderful. Good.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about 2019. When you come up with your calendar for the year, are you coming up with many classes at once, and then you're kind of doing a launch? You're putting it out there that I've got my calendar and I have five classes or six or whatever? Or do they kind of come in here and there?
No, I'm a little bit more, this is where the left brain part of me really comes into play, where it's like, I need to be thinking about this in advance. I need to be forecasting. And also I want to be able to curate the classes so that I'm not, you know, doing back to back, eco dyeing, and I'm not doing back to back collage. And, you know, I mean, I need to be able to spread things out. And one of the things that I've learned is that if you are inviting, artists to come in and to teach, their schedules are, you know, they're already booked out for next year.
Oh, okay.
So you have to get in early enough on the game to even be a contender to get them.
So they can put you on their calendar. All right. Go ahead.
So I end up putting, because I'm visual, I end up putting a big sheet of paper up in my office studio with each month laid out. And then I've got post-it notes. And these are people that I, you know, I've created a list of artists that I'd like, that I would really like to come and teach. And so then I've got post-it notes and I'm kind of mapping out before I even talk to them.
Oh, okay.
And so that I kind of have a better sense of what I'm doing in terms of, like I said, I don't want to have too many similar classes all bunched up together. I want to be able to spread things out. And then I start with, you know, contacting those artists that I would like to, and I always start at the top.
At what month are you starting for a new calendar year?
I started planning 2019 in March and April.
Oh my gosh.
2018. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And so by July 1st, I was launching.
So that's when they went live and people could start signing up for
right.
them. Oh,
yep.
Okay.
All and right. I launched the first half, it was June or July of this past year. I launched the first half of 2019. And then, the 1st of August, I launched the second half of 2019.
Okay. So your calendar, is it filled or could you possibly add something between now and then?
I could. I mean, for instance, the Leslie Marsh and Richard Sally class that we just added for April, that'll bring me up to two classes, in the month of April.
Oh,
that was just a recent add. Leslie, and Richard, both had several people who were contacting them about teaching that class again. And Leslie, because she taught here and she saw just how perfect it was for, you know, soldering and eco dyeing and plus the work that you do indoors.
Yeah.
You know, she contacted me, and said, hey, you know, can we do this class?
All right. Like, so you were able to make it happen then.
And so I was, you know, so I think for me right now, you know, it's a lot of fun, but it's also a lot of work. And I mean, I don't want to say that. I don't like to talk about how much work it is because then people are like, well, you know, she sounds kind of ungrateful. And that's not the case at all. I'm very grateful for the opportunity, but it is an extraordinary amount of work.
Yeah.
I couldn't do this without the full support of my husband.
Sure. Yeah.
And by the time classes are all over, we're both just like really wiped out and exhausted.
Yeah. You want that December to be open and available for you.
So, well, you know, and look, we like to travel. We're now empty nesters and my husband travels all over the world with his work. And, you know, I like the, you know, we both enjoy the opportunity for me to tag along.
That's nice. Yeah.
So it's important to me to keep my schedule, you know, make my schedule in advance, have a little bit of wiggle room, but I really don't want to overbook myself. I don't want to have every weekend of workshops or
that makes sense.
And, you know, because there are other places people can go on other weekends. You don't always have to come here.
right. Now, you do squeeze in some things called open studios. What is that?
Absolutely. Open studio is, I do this. It's usually the last Sunday of every month, and it's totally free.
Okay.
It's a chance for people who, you know, are thinking about signing up for a class. It's a way for them to get into the shallow end of the pool.
And
come and check it out. But it's really what it is about, my creative tribe. These are local artists for the most part who look forward to coming here, at Open Studio, and we, you know, the studio's open for 5 hours and people come and they work on whatever it is they're working on. They, sometimes will do some casual skill shares. A couple of months ago, we had kind of a Leslie Marsh alumni reunion and we,
oh, that's nice.
You know, did some eco dyeing that we had learned in her class. you know, we have a free little library that's art and design related books, as well as a place that, you know, when people destash their art studios, you know, all those okay. art supply hoarding, you know, oh, gee, I love that stencil so much. I bought five more, you know,
and haven't opened four of them. Right.
It happens. And yes, yes, it does. Honey, plug your ears again. but so it's also an opportunity for people to just, you know, bring some supplies and share and, you know, de-stash and fun stuff like that. It's community. And that's really what Open Studio is about.
Oh, that's great. I love that. I love that concept. And then it's also getting them away from their own house where you may, you know, sometimes you just kind of get a creative block when you're in the same place all the time. So this way
Absolutely.
You get away. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. And some people, you know, the only space that they have to do any of their art is like at their kitchen table or something like that.
Right.
And
yeah.
so it's great, you know, that they can come, they can, you know, have the space to spread out. They're not so worried about it. If they're stuck on something, they can get input, you know, ask for input. You know, I think Amazon, pricing surges every now and then on Open Studios because somebody will introduce a favorite supply and everybody's like, oh my gosh,
they
whip out their phones and they're all in Amazon and ordering it. It's hilarious.
That's great. Yeah.
We have a great time.
That's wonderful. Well, I'm trying to think, have we covered everything? I'm looking at my notes.
If I wanted to say anything that I haven't said already, it would be that if you are in a position where you have some extra room, and whether it's, you know, you can have four or six people or 20 over and to do some art, it would be to start your own little open studio. Get together with people, find your creative tribe. And this is really a situation of if you build it, they will come.
That's great. Yeah.
And you start out slow, but just be persistent. I think that, you know, it's, you know, if you want something, it's really up to you to go out and make it happen.
That's great advice.
And for me, it was, I really wanted more art classes. I wanted more in-person art classes because that's what works better for me. And I wanted a community, a creative tribe, if you will, of people that I could engage with on a regular basis. And, you know, there's just a synergy that happens when you're creating in the company of others.
Right. And like-minded people. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. So that would be my only thing is just, you know, go out and make it happen. You know, even if it's just you and a couple of friends getting together once a month just to do art, just do it.
That's wonderful. Great advice. Well, that's a great way to end this. You've really created something wonderful out there. Can't wait to come visit.
Well, I can't wait to have you.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I want to, before I go, ask you, what is the name of the website so people can find you?
It is wayartyonder.com. So we're on, so www.wayartyonder.com.
Alrighty.
I also have a studio Facebook page and on Instagram. And on the studio's Facebook page and on the website, you can sign up for the mailing list. I announce classes first through both Facebook and the newsletter. Generally, my newsletter following, they are the first to hear about any special pre-enrollment opportunities because I do that sometimes based on you know, if we know that this artist is coming back and, you know, what they're teaching is going to be really popular as an incentive to the studios following, I'll offer them a pre-registration opportunity before it goes live and out on Facebook to the public. So,
okay. And then on your website, you make it clear as to which ones are sold out already, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's usually in all caps.
Yep. So
sold out, wait list only.
Well, you're bringing in some wonderful artists, instructors. I mean, that's great.
Oh, it's so exciting.
Yes. Yeah. So do you sit in and do all the class? Well, you probably are so busy when you've got 20 people at your house, but.
I do, but I take part in every class. You know, yes. And as my role as a hostess is sometimes I don't always finish the class with a completed project like everybody else.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get to take a class with everybody, and it's fantastic.
I bet. Fantastic. Well, you made it happen. Just what
I
you
did.
Said.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, good for you. Well, Gianna, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Suzanne. I appreciate it.
Alrighty. You have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Be sure and sign up for Jana's mailing list so you can find out what new workshops are being offered at Way Art Yonder Studio. Here are some great takeaways from this episode. Number 1. For some great design inspiration, check out the buildings of architect Frank Gehry. Number 2. Try online classes to see if that's a style class that works for you. You can find just about any art technique taught in one of those classes. I give a lot of information about online classes in my episode number 10. Number 3. See my episode number 12 show notes for links to a lot of destination art classes, including Way Art Yonder Studio. Number 4. If there are no classes near you, invite instructors to come to you. Number 5. Remember that instructors book their classes well in advance, so you'll need to book them 6 to 12 months before the class date. Number 6. If you have extra room, you can start your own open studio. Number 7. Inviting other artists over will help you to form your own creative tribe. And number 8. As Jana says, if you want something, you can make it happen. Be sure and check out my show notes for this episode on my website at suzannredmond.com. I've got links to the website and social media accounts for Way Art Yonder Studio and many other things that we discussed. Thank you to Jana for telling us all about her art and her business. I hope you've gained some courage about your own art by listening to her talk about how hers has developed. Try a live workshop or online class somewhere to see what style class suits you best. And if you've got some extra space in your home, take Jana's advice and start your own open studio. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please go to iTunes and leave me a review. And thank you for listening to the Left Brain Artist Podcast. I'm Suzanne Redmond. See you next time.